They're like, oh, you're making fun of dead kids. You're a Sandy Hook denier. And I'm like, if anything, I'm making fun of strippers and like their names. So you never know what's going to trigger people.
Welcome to another deep dive edition of the Chicks on the Right podcast. We are so excited. We have Chrissy Mayer with us. If you are not familiar with Chrissy Mayer, what are you even doing with your life? She is a stand-up comedian. She is, she's got a gajillion different podcasts. Like the one question out of the gate before we even get to how you got into stand-up comedy as your career, I want to know how you do so many things because you do the tour, you did the CD, you do all the different podcasts.
Do you ever sleep? I do. And when I sleep, I really sleep. I think I just, well, I've always had a day job ever since I started doing stand-up, like I guess maybe about 13 years ago, always worked at least like one or two jobs. And finally, during the pandemic, like I was working remotely too from home, and I just would use all my vacation time to go on tour and really would just try my best to balance it. And then finally it was like, oh, we want everyone to go back into the building and you have to be vaccinated. So I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. So they considered me to be voluntarily resigned, even though they just like straight up fired me for not getting vaccinated. And I was like, well, I guess I'm doing this full time now. So I started my business in like technically in like 2022. And last year was the first full year that I didn't have a day job. So I was like, you know what? Let me at least podcast as much or as close to as much as I was working at my day job to just make sure I can try to, you know, make enough money to live, but just to make sure it's filling the time. I really thought of it as this is now my full-time job is, you know, to do comedy and podcasting and then just trying to get more tour dates here and there. But yeah, I definitely sleep. I always think I could be busier too.
What was your day job?
Exactly.
I was an executive assistant at a big media company. Haven't really like talked. I should. I need to like figure out how I'm going to talk about like how it all went down, because when I got the job, now it's like 7 years ago, I was so excited. I was like, wow, I'm working in media. But it was crazy. Like my boss, like less than a year into working there, he got a crazy like foot infection and had to go to the hospital for 6 weeks. So I would like visit him and I would like spend my own money on taking cabs to visit him in the hospital to like give him his mail so he could open. He's like 80 years old. So it's my job was mostly just like making him feel relevant still. I was like, oh, like open your mail. And then he couldn't write his own email. So he would dictate to me, like he would talk and then I'd have to write down what he was saying and then put that into an email, save it into his draft so that he could send it whenever he felt like it. And that was all of his emails had to be done that way. So I'm like, there's a reason why they make people retire at around a certain age, but
this guy would. So you're kind of a caretaker. You're more like a caretaker than
an exec. I was kind of like a live-in nurse for sure. And he did hand me his bedpan to empty out during this whole hospital stay. But I was like, it was the beginning of the job. I wanted to not get fired. I wanted to like do a good job. So in the midst of that, I just, you know, and then slowly over time, not taking lunch breaks, just like eating like a raccoon at your desk and just never really got a real raise the whole time. Like, I think I tried to ask once and they were like, no. And I was like, okay, never mind.
It's just, but you were doing comedy like, I mean, at the same time.
Yes.
Because you've been doing comedy for a long. How did you get into that? And like, what was your big break?
I thought I wanted to be a reporter. I went to school for communications. And when I was a junior in college, I interned at Dateline because I just was like, I want to be a reporter. Like, my mom, this was like the one thing that I really am grateful. Well, I'm so grateful to my mom for many things, but she made friends with everybody. She was the secretary in the office for music and performing arts at Long Island, where we're from. And she just made friends with everybody. So she made friends with a producer at NBC. And she kind of, and that's how I was able to get this internship at Dateline as a junior. Like, that was the connection. And then once I was there, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to be a reporter at all. Like, this is horrible. Like, I was with Stone Phillips. I'm like, he's so boring. I definitely.
Oh my God, I remember him too.
That's how he is. That's how he talks all the time. That's not just an act. He's like, hello. I would like some more coffee and please make some copies of the rundown. I was like, wow, I don't want to do this. So then I was able, I give myself so much credit. I was able to reach out to, there was one female comedy writer at the Conan O'Brien show at the time. This is when Conan was still in New York. So I was able to reach out, and I got very lucky and got an internship lined up for the next year at Late Night with Conan.
Oh my gosh, what was that like?
And I was able to do that because during the summer, it's nearly impossible. You literally have to be the daughter or son of somebody who already works at NBC. Like, mm-hmm. they're highly, highly competitive. And I just was lucky that not as many people were going for them during the school year because the kids who are related to the people that work there, they go to school all over the country, of course. So I was lucky that I could just commute back and forth. So I'd come in like twice a week and was able to get a college credit somehow just for making coffee and keeping the gum stocked for Conan.
And what's
that's
he,
what
is,
I realized.
What is he like?
He was great. I mean, I didn't really spend a ton of time with him. I was more with the writers, mm-hmm. Just kind of like observing their process and like kind of trying to get, you know, like I remember was so shy and nervous just being there because there's so much competition even among right. the interns for just getting the ear of somebody. Like everyone is really trying to like kiss up and you're kind because everyone's trying to get hired for yeah. after college, you know, they're like, please pick me. I would love to have the low paying job of PA or whatever or page. And I would talk to Jose Arroyo, who was a writer on the staff at the time, Brian Stack. He had appeared in a lot of the little like character bits. And it was just Conan would just sort of like breeze by, like, you know, sometimes you're getting his coffee or ordering the dinners for everybody. So I didn't really like get too close to him.
Yeah.
I just loved the environment. It was like very exciting. I was like, okay, I love being around comedy people. This feels like more my speed. Mm-hmm. And the writers were just saying, hey, if you're interested in this at all, like just take improv classes. So after I graduated, I started at UCB and then I did Magnet. So I did about 5 years of improv. And this would be, I'd work my day job, be done at like 7 or something, you know, 6 or 7 or 5, depending on the job. And then you get into your improv class. That's like 2 hours. And then I would commute home to Long Island because I lived with my parents till I was about 26. So just for the first few years after college, like day job, whatever it was, improv after. And then the days I wasn't taking class, I would go to UCB or Magnet and just like watch shows and be an improv nerd. You know, like these packed rooms where you're like sitting on the floor and you're just like a sponge absorbing as much as you can. I loved the environment, you know, especially at UCB, you know, they'd have like their Ass Cat show, which I think was on Sundays. It was like the big show where the big improvisers would come in, like Amy Poehler or like Matt Walsh whoever was kind of in the New York City scene. And you'd start to see a lot of these people like in the commercials. You'd be like, oh, wow. And you notice that like just about everybody in commercials is doing improv. You know, they really don't have herpes. They're just, have to try out for it. And I was like, and so that was really cool. But after about 5 years of that, I did a couple of teams, but you're doing it thinking, oh, I guess I'm going to be chosen for SNL. Like, I don't know what else to do. And that wasn't really happening. So I started to do a one woman show, and that I did at the Magnet Theater. And that ran for 6 weeks. It was so much work. It was the first time in my life, like, oh my God, this is what actors go through. Like, you're just memorizing lines and going through blocking. And I was rehearsing it all in the upstairs room of the Drama Bookshop, which is a place where a lot of like, if you're in theater or Broadway, you go there to buy scripts. And both of my directors were more from like the acting world than like, the improv acting world and stand-up are so different. So after I did that one-woman show, I was like, you know what? I think I maybe could do stand-up because I was always so intimidated by stand-up. It seemed so scary to me.
It does seem scary. Yeah. Like, how do you even write? How do you begin to, what if you just don't feel funny That's one day? Like, how do you do that?
Improv seemed easier to me because I'm like, I'm like, I can act like a squirrel. Like, I can do funny voices. Like, I can, you know... It just seems easier because it's how you naturally are with your friends. And then stand up, I was like, oh, like, what do you even? But I started to, you know, go to open mics, and there was a show at New York Comedy Club. It was like a bringer show. So every month or every couple of months, they go, all right, bring 6 people. You'll do your 8 to 10 minutes and we'll tape it for you. So now you have this nice tape of you doing your best that you can now send to festivals and to other produced shows. And then I started doing stand-up, I think it was March of 2010. And I think my mom came to like my first official show because it was at Comics. And then I started doing more of the Bringers. And then you pull in like all my friends from improv, all my friends from whatever day job I have. I'm like, yeah, you guys want to come out? And then over time, your friends go, okay, we know what this is. We don't want to come to any more of these Bringer shows. Because like, your friends are broke too. They don't want to spend $15 on a ticket and then two drinks. So eventually just like, you know, you start producing your own show. And then I started to do a show at the Parkside Lounge, which was free. And I like, I look back and cringe because I'm like, wow, I had a free show. And I literally just got the reminder from Facebook the other day. It was like 10 years ago today. And they were like, here's your lineup from your show. And it was a bunch of comics that have quit. One that's still going, Pete Lee. And then Pete Davidson was on the lineup as well.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
I was like, look at that. You could have seen Pete Davidson 10 years ago for free at the Parkside Lounge. So it's just amazing.
That is
the
nuts.
Directions everybody goes in.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's just, it really
do
was a
you,
slog.
Do you like the travel?
For many of the years, it was like just a slog, like just going to open mics. Yeah.
God, I am a chronic insomniac. I don't know if I've ever told you this. Probably like
I know this
about a
you.
Bajillion, skabillion times in the 14 years, 15 years of our friendship. I am a chronic insomniac. And one of the things that really helps me with my insomnia is my pillows. And now they have
how much are you loving the 2.0?
They're amazing. They're amazing because it's like a coolness. It's like a temperature control on my face and my head. it's amazing. I bet. Right? I mean, it's like, I know people are like, how can it do that, Daisy? I don't know. It's just something like it's like this temperature control goodness. It's like the cover is totally different than the original MyPillows. They're fantastic, you guys. You have to check these out. They're so great.
They're
so great.
Magic. I don't know the technology. I will never claim to know the technology, mm-mm. But whatever they're doing with the MyPillow 2.0, it's freaking magic. And it's amazing right now because with our code chicks at mypillow.com/chicks, it is buy one, get one on the new MyPillow 2.0. And I have a feeling that people are rushing to buy these. So you should probably act now because I don't know how long these are going to stay around. I don't know if this is a special deal. I don't know.
I don't even put a pillowcase on mine because that's how much
ooh, nice.
I know. It's weird. It's a little weird, but I don't.
Well, it's not weird because they're so easily washable.
Right.
So
I just don't even like to put a pillowcase on it because I like to have my face on the technology. I'm just putting that out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, buy one, get one. You cannot beat that as a good deal. MyPillow.com/chicks. Yeah. But still, like when you're doing podcasting now and you're doing the tour, I mean, how do you like that schedule? Like being constantly gone and doing all those things. And then do you keep up the podcast like when you're traveling as well?
You have to keep a balance and you have to figure out what works for you. That is why like, you know, people go, oh, men are funnier. No, it's like, it's because men are better suited for the stand-up lifestyle because at a certain point, like that's why I tell that to people all the time. I'm like, we shouldn't be shocked that a lot of women aren't signing up to do stand-up because you're ideally starting it like after college. So like 21, 22. And it typically takes like 10 years for you to like get really settled and like find your voice and get your contacts so that you can tour. So that's like, that's 5 to 10 years in your 20s and 30s. Like when you're supposed to be meeting, like most women want to be meeting a guy then, getting married, starting a family. Unless you're mentally ill, then you choose stand-up. So, and then like, I think women are generally a little bit more high maintenance. Like sometimes these road gigs, you're staying in like the comedy condo where the sheets haven't been changed in months. There's sand in the bed and it's just like dirty. Like there's just not a lot of feminine touches, you know, on the road. Or if you get, you know, pretty decent, then they'll put you up at a hotel, which is, that's the level like I'm starting to be at, which is great. You know, I mean, I either can afford to like book my own hotel up front and then you get kind of reimbursed from doing the show. Or, you can start selling merch and then that can help.
But even that life is kind of hard. Being on the road and stuff is even.
Yes. And for me, I've figured out like I'm really happy doing podcasting as to take the place of my kind of 9 to 5. And then I like to be on the road. Like I think ideally, like I think like a couple of weekends out of the month or if it's one like 10-day trip. But I noticed that after about 10 days, like I go, okay, that is like that feels like too long to be away. And
yeah. Yeah. Because like we're really kind of nesters. Yeah. Women are more nesters. It's just how we are.
And you're just like, okay, how many times am I going to wear my underwear inside and out before? No.
Right.
Like you learn you can wash them in the shower and then you hang them up and then you're like, okay, I've made my underwear stretch a few more
now
days.
Now it's getting gross. I need to go home now. Yeah.
But I will. I'll have like a luggage that can fit on carry-on and then I'll put all my clothes in and then I will fit in some merch shirts that I'll try to sell. That's what I realized. I need to start probably bringing more stuff because I brought like 10 merch shirts with me for this whole weekend of shows in California. And I basically like sold all of them and all my headshots. So I'm like, okay, I need more. But the merch shirts are mixed in with all my regular clothes. So I have to be careful, like not to just wear one to sleep one night. And I'll be like, all right, merch shirt, gently used, kind of smells sweaty. We're going to knock $5 off.
Knock $5? People would pay good money for that.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, you have the people, you have like the total weirdos.
Sell it on my OnlyFans. And then I also do bring a separate, like big, larger tote bag, which has my sort of like to-go podcasting equipment. Yeah. So I'll have like a Yeti microphone and my laptop and a ring light that I can fold up to be about like this big and headphones. So it's like smaller, slightly cheaper versions of the equipment I use at home that I can just carry with me. And I go, okay, I'm either going to do a live stream after a show one night or record a podcast. Like there have been road trips where I try to go live like every day and then I do the shows at night.
I know. It's brutal. It's just like a brutal schedule. So when you're doing...
It takes away from your like sightseeing, you know, like I'll go to these places and I won't really like go and do and see the things people tell you to do while you're like in San Diego or whatever. Cause I'm just like in my hotel.
You're like, I've seen one zoo, I've seen them all. Trip. Yeah. I don't need to see the zoo.
I love zoos. That's so funny, Daisy, that you say that because especially if I'm like, I remember we were in like Florida and I just like, it was for Thanksgiving or something. And I just got in a huge fight with my dad and like my fiance was like, should we go to the zoo? Should we go to the Naples Zoo? I'm like, yes, let's go. Cause the zoo was like my happy place.
Yeah, seeing all the animals. So when you're doing stand-up, have you offended anybody with any? Because, I mean, you lean right, you know? So
I definitely offend people in all different ways. Mm-hmm. And it's the latest thing that's offended people was basically just a tweet. It was a picture I had hosted on InfoWars, I think back in September. And I had all my friends on that, you know, live in the Texas or Austin area, wherever it is, because they're like, you're hosting the 3-hour show. I was like, woohoo, everyone in the pool. So I just invite everybody over for different segments, like my friends from Friday Night Tights, my friends from stand up, like my friends from YouTube. And it was great. And at the end of it, I took a picture of me on the desk and it said InfoWars behind me. And I posted it, just picture me on the desk. And I was like, oh, my stripper name is Sandy Hook. And that is something that people had so much of a problem. I said, I don't understand. They're like, oh, you're making fun of dead kids. You're a Sandy Hook denier. No. And I'm like, if anything, I'm making fun of strippers and like their names. So you never know what's going to trigger people.
Yeah, people... Yeah, because I figured, especially too, just being a right. I mean, I guess I'd call you a right winger. Like being somebody who is like conservative, right leaning. Just that alone would trigger people because they're not used to that, especially in stand up. Right? I mean, like you get on the stage, just alone in stand up, you say anything these days, people will rush the stage and like beat you up. You got to be a little afraid of that.
That's not happened to me yet. One time someone threw a sandwich at us. We were doing a show in Atlantic City called, I think it was called like Dirty Jokes. And it was a beer festival in Atlantic City in Jersey. And they threw the sandwich at my friend Amory because she was a Vikings fan. But our stand-up stage was right by the porta potties. That's why it was called Dirty Jokes. They're like, yeah, just do stand-up for 3 hours like while people go to the bathroom. And they're like, just make it work.
Oh my God.
You're going to get $100 at the end of this. We're like, okay.
No.
Yep. Do you ever get the thing where like if you're out and about and you just meet somebody that maybe doesn't know who you are and you're exchanging pleasantries and they ask what you do and you say that you're a stand-up comedian, do you ever get the people who'll be like, oh my God, say something funny? And then if so, do you have a standard comeback?
This always happens in cabs or Ubers and whenever I like land in the city that I'm going to go perform in, if they strike up a conversation, because like usually if I don't want to talk, I'll just say like, I'm an assistant or like something boring that they don't want to ask questions about. Yeah. But when I say that I'm a comedian and people always do ask for a joke, I always say this joke, which is a street joke. Anybody can use. I didn't come up with it. I'll say to them, like, if mothers have Mother's Day and fathers have Father's Day, what do single guys have? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, Palm Sunday. And then they laugh, okay. And then they stop asking questions.
That's the standard. That's good.
I have to give it like a joke. It's solid. It's a solid joke.
Happy unless they give you a joke.
Okay, so today you and I found out that Omaha Steaks has this thing called the triple berry tartlet.
I don't know where we've been. And why we've been so focused on apple tartlets when there is also this option.
Well, I've been focused on meat, first of all. I'm always focused on meat when I go to omahasteaks.com, right? And then I was always, for dessert, I was always focused on the apple tartlet. But then somebody alerted us to this triple berry tartlet. It's going to be my new favorite thing. I don't think you understand.
I can already tell.
Mm-hmm. And I want to put a little bit of ice cream on top. Just a little bit. After I put it in the microwave, I have it out. And then put a little ice cream on top. Are you okay? Are you all right?
I mean, I'm drooling. Can you see the drool?
I think she needs a cigarette, you guys. So like, seriously, that's what I'm going to have. I'm going to have that with my filet, little cherry tartlet. I feel like that's all you need, really, because you get all your basic food groups.
You really do, especially if you get the scalloped potatoes. Right, that's like a vegetable. If you order the sides, that's a total vegetable.
It's a vegetable.
Hell yes, it is a vegetable. And the amazing thing, too, about Omaha Steaks is that we are smack dab in the middle of their semi-annual sale, which means everything on the entire website is 50% off. And you can create your own customized package of goodies. Like, I know that they have their pre-made, like pre-selected, you know, they've got their own curated packages of stuff. You can either do that or you can get your own custom-made package of goodness based on your own personal selections. It doesn't matter what you get. It's 50% off. And then when you use code CHICKS at checkout, additional $30 off your order. Right. That's how much they love you. That is how much we love them. That's what they do for our audience.
Or you can just order cherry tartlets. You can just order cherry tartlets. You can just do that.
You can do that too.
You can do that.
OmahaSteaks.com. There
you go. But it's pretty crazy because if you were to go to a stand-up show, like I don't think anything I say is all that like alt-right or right-wing or ultra-conservative. Mm-hmm. Like I definitely would consider myself anti-woke, like because I was a leftist when I graduated college, Democrat, raging feminist, all of the things. And I started my stand-up career kind of in that space. So in the last few years, as I've sort of woken up politically and become more outspoken, I've lost a lot of friends and acquaintances, people who like don't want to deal with me anymore. And it happened in waves.
Wow.
So like when I'm started a show on Compound Media, that was kind of a wave of people detaching because Compound Media is known as like a free speech network. And then when people started to associate free speech with like, you know, white supremacy or whatever, or racism, it's just people are so dumb.
Yeah.
And because I started my comedy career doing a monthly show at the Stonewall Inn, which is a gay landmark. It's like where the Stonewall riots started. So people would be like, oh my God, I'm like, I still love gay people. Like, yeah. I just am doing another show. And then when I became an out Trump voter, an out Trump supporter, that was another kind of wave of people being like, ugh. And then January 6th was a big one. That was kind of the last one. I had people that were messaging my friends of mine, people I didn't even know, messaging friends of mine on Facebook being like, hey, just letting you know that Chrissy Mayer was at the Capitol for January 6th. You should probably unfriend her.
Oh, my God.
And just hearing people say, we should make a list of all the comedians who were at the Capitol on January 6th so we can blacklist them. And it was literally just me and some other guy. Like, it was a short list. There were not that many people there that day.
What was your experience like?
It was so much fun. That's what people don't talk about. It was a great time. It was, I got out there the day before. There was some speakers gathered in one area, this part of like D.C., and I just was going through all my videos the other day, actually, with Nick Searcy. He's doing another documentary about January 6th. So he had me on it. And it's funny because we're watching one of these videos and I actually pan by and I see Ray Epps. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the guy. And he was kind of patting two guys on the back. And I was like, oh, my God, that's him. It was like, where's Waldo of January 6th? Like, that's him. Wow.
Oh, you know, I've heard that about January 6th. I had a friend, like an old friend that went there that I guess she was there like the day or the day before. And she said it was like kind of a festival It was atmosphere. Awesome. Like she goes, listen, I wasn't anywhere near like when everything went down, where the stuff went down. She's like, but that just the environment, like sort of the ambiance of other places was very festival like. Like people were really happy and lovey. And yeah, it was like a kids, festival. Yeah.
People in costumes. Yeah. I mentioned this on my album, which is called Live from January 6th. But there was a guy there dressed in a skeleton costume that had a sign that said, I voted for Biden 9 times. Like that's that's the best part. That's yeah. You got to go to these rallies. You see some really funny stuff. And then there would be like, you know, Bryson Gray and Forgiato Blow, like freestyle rapping. And then a whole circle would form around them of people just like enjoying the music. And like these just really fun little moments that happen. And people with their kids, people with their dogs in costume. Like I'm going through all this footage with Nick Searcy and I'm like, okay, there's an embarrassing amount of dog selfies on this camera roll.
This is the stuff like, you don't. Oops, you don't hear about this stuff. You've not heard about any of this. You've not seen footage of this stuff. I mean, this is because
they want to demonize everybody associated with it. They want to use any video anywhere and zoom in on everybody and use that to arrest people. It's really disgusting. And they want to demonize basically dissent. They want to demonize patriotism. Gosh. They want to demonize liking Trump. Of course, I mean we've been used to that for years.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting to see how that translates to my comedy career, because like if you see me on stage, you'd be like, OK, she's not like hardcore anything. She's just like a 30 something redhead living it up in the big city. No, I feel I'm kind of like middle of the road, maybe sometimes on some things more libertarian, like socially pretty liberal. Like I'm a pretty normal. I think I have pretty normal takes. But if you go online and Google me, you'd be like, oh, wow. And I think for that reason, other comedians want to distance themselves from me. Like I've gone through a few different openers, like girls that would tour with me for a while, like opening for me. And then all of a sudden they like just stop getting back to me because they are afraid. And then I'll hear from like a third party. They're afraid. Like,
isn't that ridiculous?
Oh, she's associated with Compound Media or January 6th. And it's like, but then I see them, you know, stop opening for me, but then they don't do any better. It's not like their careers take off. So it's just the fear. And I understand. And what we went through with the pandemic and the lockdowns, people, I was one of the first comics to speak out and say, hey, I'm not going to perform anywhere that mandates vaccination upon entry. Because de Blasio, I think that was in August. What was it? August of 21 or something, where the mandates came down in New York City. And I was like, yeah, that's it. I'm just not going to perform. If that means I never perform in a club in New York City again, so be it. Because at that point, I'd already been on the road. I liked performing kind of more in Florida, Texas, middle of the country better anyhow. So I was like, I guess I'm not really missing out on much. And I felt like I had to walk the walk in that respect. And then eventually later on, I think Jim Brewer came out and said he was not going to perform anywhere that mandated vaccines. But I was shocked. I thought so many more would stand up and ultimately you realize like you don't know what everybody's money situation is. It's easy to judge people that didn't come out and be like, fuck this. But like most comics are like broke paycheck to paycheck. Some have day jobs, some don't. Some, you know, they come from money, their family's floating them and paying their rent, but you really don't know. And that's why I kind of have some grace for people. You know, what good is it to just like rag on people who didn't speak up for years? And if they're figuring it out now and speaking out now, okay, well that's good. Like
I guess it's okay for them not to speak up, but I guess it would be different if they were speaking out against you. I think that's one thing that would have really pissed me off. That's a little bit different. How do you feel about all the stuff now that's coming out where people are being? You know, I mean, now it's like, hey, it was all bullshit.
So, oh yeah, even with like, you know, Woody Harrelson's monologue on SNL, it's like, eh, okay, but your new movie comes out March 10th, and like when it comes to actors, like it's hard to believe anything they say because they're ultimately actors, and even when you see them on an interview, they could still be acting. You know, Bryan Cranston recently came out like pretty hard against, he just was on, I think maybe it was Chris Wallace's show.
And yeah.
He's like, I don't understand how slavery could have happened. And then you look up his house and you're like, okay, he doesn't live anywhere around black people. Like his house looks like Fort Knox. And you realize like these actors are actors even when they're doing appearances. And to me, it looked like he was just putting in the, you know, like Hollywood passes around a collection plate. And that is when you go on these appearances, you have to sing the song of Hollywood, which is like, be obsessed with racism, hate on white people. I'm so privileged. And it's like, you're an an actor, like if we had said to Bryan Cranston, like, sorry, Bryan, you only got to where you got in your career because you're white and you're privileged, he'd be like, oh, no, it's because I'm talented. It's because I worked really hard. So it's hard to trust these actors and Hollywood people when you see them speaking out. Like, I'm always very skeptical. That's why I more so trust like regular, you know, people like you guys or comedians or even some YouTubers. I'm like, okay, like they're not, it's not so obvious how that they're like bought and paid off.
Yeah. I have not slept in like 3 days because of this like chronic migraine. And, you know, the only thing that has helped me is immediate effects. You know that stuff?
I mean, it doesn't do anything for your migraine, but that skincare line.
No, I'm serious. The immediate effects, like most people just use it like right under their eyes. I use it like all over.
And you're talking about GenuCell's immediate effects. Right, GenuCell's. This is the stuff that's made for under eyes.
It's made for under eyes. But I use it like, I mean, I'll use it all around my eyes. Like I'll use it all around. It like wakes up my face. And listen, I know that probably like the indication is probably just to put it underneath your eyes, like right under the bags. But you guys, I will use it like all around my eyes, kind of like maybe even a little bit below like where I'm supposed to. And it's like this really cool sensation. It's fantastic. So in the morning, I'll do that before I put my makeup on. And it just, it does, it wakes you up. Like it completely wakes you up. I mean, it's better than a cup of coffee.
Well, and that's great because if you haven't slept, uh-huh. you need camouflage.
Right.
And that is definitely something that the immediate effects and the immediate effects 2 from the GenuCell skincare line do for
it's
you.
It's remarkable.
That is included, by the way. The immediate effects 2 is included in the most popular package, GenuCell's most popular package, which you can find at GenuCell.com/chicks, GenuCell.com/chicks. And the greatest thing right now is that they have a surprise savings on the most popular package at checkout. And if you do a subscription order, you're going to get a free beauty box on top of that, plus free shipping. So it's a really good time to try out their entire line that's included in the most popular package, GenuCell.com/chicks. Well, I mean, the cancel culture thing is a genuine worry. And you weren't canceled, but you faced the wrath of YouTube, as have we. We've gotten the strikes before and the content blocking and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't realize that you were considering, or maybe you still are, maybe you can give us an update, what's going on with you and YouTube and a potential lawsuit. Is that still a thing? Did that get resolved?
It's not
what happened
resolved
there?
Yet. I think I'm kind of just like, it's a much slower process than I thought. And I think I'm just kind of still waiting for them to get back to me. Like I'm working.
So tell people who may not know, like what content was taken down.
A video from, I think it was last summer. This was something that many other YouTube channels, you know, professional and unprofessional had talked about. Like, and when I say professional, I mean like Fox, MSNBC, like all the regular mainstream news channels. And it was a fight that happened at a French fry place in New York City called like Bell Frites or Bell Fries. And you guys will know when I explain this to you, like exactly what moment this was. It was when a bunch of girls came in at like 4 a.m. Obviously, they're drunk and hungry, and they were upset that they had to pay a few dollars
fries.
Extra for the sauces, because the sauces are good, but they are worth paying extra for because they're that good. But they were upset that they had to pay extra for these sauces, so they all of a sudden start throwing the sauces, you know, over the counter. There's still these plastic pandemic shields up. They're banging. They're taking those and throwing those down. They're jumping over the counter. They're literally they sent one of the employees to the emergency room, like hit him on the head with a chair or a piece of equipment or something, like damaged the whole. It's like a small little. It's not like an eat-in restaurant, but it's like a. It's just on the street. It's like these people aren't like making big bucks and they're just destroying the cashier, all the equipment. And I just was like, yeah, talking about, I was like, well, this is what happens. People get upset when they have to pay extra for toppings. Like I'm playing the video. I'm kind of doing joking comedy commentary over it. And I got struck with like a graphic violence.
Oh my God.
And I was like, this is such bullshit because currently you can still see this footage up on newscasts for like, you know, Fox, Telemundo. I remember I listed it all with my claim, like still currently up. And I was like, it's weird that I get struck also right before the midterms. I just was like, the timing
what
of it was very
world?
Sus. And some people were like, oh, it's because you're kind of like a right wing personality. They just want to shut you up a few days before the election. And I think it was, I couldn't stream for 7 days. Yeah. Which sucked, but it sucked extra because I was just about to do my content house, which is a, I've done a couple of them, but you know, I rent out a house and this time it was in Orlando and we were supposed to do a 48-hour live stream and I have like 20 people like living in this house over the weekend and all comedians and YouTubers and
oh my God.
Just people that are fun. And I was like, wow, I have no YouTube. I'm about to do this 48-hour live stream. And then I got set up on Rumble, which I was very grateful for. So now I stream everything to Rumble as well.
Yeah.
Everything's copied over there. But I just was like, it could have been really bad. And when you said before, like, I kind of do face cancel culture, but it's not like it keeps me down entirely, like stops me from performing. But in small ways, it'll crop up. Like I was supposed to do a show. Well, I did do a show in Buffalo. And that's when you're someone like me who doesn't have an agent or a manager. I have nobody, because there are kind of like the mainstream management companies like William Morris or like United Talent, and they'll rep little like smaller people and then big household names. And the way that they'll book their talent is, all right, we have Bert Kreischer going up at this club who's a big seller and he's going to sell out at these dates. But let's also book this smaller person who's coming up. And that's how a smaller comic will grow and become a household name, is because they have the benefit of those networks, like the contacts, basically. But with someone like me, it seems at the moment agents, managers don't want to go near me because of, I don't know, January 6th, being right wing, whatever. And then sometimes I think, oh, is it because I suck? Is it because I'm not selling well enough? But I will sell very well on the road. So there's definitely money to be made off of me. It's just maybe they just are not interested in the brand, I guess, or like they're scared of it or something. But so I'll have to get my gigs on my own. I'll either say, hey, to a bigger club, give me a Thursday night, give me a Sunday night, give me an off night, you know, to kind of prove myself. And if that sells well enough, maybe I can come back and do a weekend. Or it's like what happened in Buffalo, where it was a cigar lounge and they're like, we're big fans of you. It's called Nickel City. They're veteran owned and they opened during the pandemic and they managed to stay in business.
Wow.
Yeah. Opening the store in the pandemic. And they're like, you know what? We are not a comedy club. We're obviously a cigar lounge, but we're big fans of you. Just come out. Like, we'll make a stage. We'll set up chairs. We'll have a show here. And I was like, OK, cool. I'm down. Let's do it. And people called Nickel City Cigars. They not only called the business itself, but they called all the surrounding businesses telling them, oh, Chrissy Mayer's having a racist party.
Oh, my God.
At the cigar lounge. We need to shut it down. We need to cancel it.
Oh, my God.
She's so racist. You know, they'll do things like send the picture of me on the InfoWars desk and be like, look, she's a Sandy Hook denier. People will get whatever they can that they think looks bad from the internet and send it to these venues or the surrounding businesses in the effort to try to get it shut down. They were like calling Nickel City and like playing like gay porn. There were people that were trying to like hack into the computer system.
What did Nickel City do? What did they do?
They just kind of laughed in their face, but they, you know, these venues do tell me, hey, like we got a lot of calls and complaints about you, or they'll tell me like the extent that these, you know, the haters went to try to get the show canceled. I mean, luckily these guys were like based and cool and don't care about cancel culture and are not going to bend the knee to like the woke mob. So they didn't cancel the show. The show happened.
Do they not know that they don't have to go to your show? Yeah. Like people are not forced to go see you.
On that show, there was like one opener who ultimately like canceled because he didn't, you know, because of my reputation. But then we got another person to open and it was fine. The show was great. And they were like, guess what? There were Black people in the audience who had a great time, laughed, enjoyed themselves. So it's,
and you know, there is something to be said for growing organically. I mean, we're living proof of that. I mean, we're not huge. I mean, I even wrote it. We even celebrated our 14th anniversary yesterday. And one of the things I wrote, well, thanks. And one of the things I wrote in our little, we totally forgot about it yesterday. And then,
because that's how old we are.
Exactly. And then Mock reminded me, and I wrote this little anniversary post today. And I was like, you know, we're not one of the big guys, you know, we've never been one of the big guys. But one of the things that we are very proud of is that we grew organically and we've always been, you know, more focused on like our people, like our community. You seem kind of like that too. Like you give more of a crap about the people that you entertain, which I think is,
to stay and meet people. Like I will stay and shake the hand and hug every person who hangs around after a show. Like I really appreciate them because I don't have management, like, you know, juicing me up. I don't have, all that. I mean, I definitely have support of like my family and my fiance, but like I don't have what a most comics with great careers. And, you know, someone you see with like a Netflix or an HBO special, they've got an army of people behind them, you know, in the business of making them successful.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I appreciate like every person that comes out. Totally. Just like this past weekend in California, I had a guy on Instagram, shout out to Adam Choit, he messaged me on Instagram. He's like, hey, I'm in Pasadena. Like, you, he was asking me like if I ever wanted to come out to do a show in Pasadena. I'm like, yeah, what do you know of any? He's like, there's an Elks Lodge. I'm like, let's do it. So we had, I sold out the Elks Lodge in Pasadena. They just set up a bunch of chairs. They dusted off the elk head for me and everything.
Oh my God, I love that so much.
Like, yeah.
See, this is what totally makes you our people. Right. Like that. Mm-hmm. That's a perfect example. Is. This is why we have.
And I have to know really quick. When are you getting married?
This year. I'm not gonna say like the specific.
You're
date.
Not saying when. Do you have a dress? Are you getting married
yes,
in a dress? Are you
I
not
just
doing
bought
a dress?
It.
You're doing
I
really.
Just bought it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's really nice. I have to just
oh
not get that.
Oh, my God.
Now.
Are we going to be able to see pictures? Are you going to send us pictures?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to
yeah,
geek
send,
out over
I'll
that,
send
Chrissy.
You guys a picture.
Okay. Because we okay. have to, because we're, like, we're like the mamas. You got to like send us all the pictures and all the geeky stuff. We're going to totally like girl
yeah,
out.
Yeah, they
over
tell
that.
You have to buy it so far in advance because
this
sometimes
is what they
you know,
say.
They have to go get made in the Ukraine for 6 months. And now it's like, is it going to come with a bullet in it? I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Chrissy, it's always so great to have you and to talk to you. And we love being on your show. We love having you on our
yes.
show. You're our people.
Yes,
for
we
sure.
totally are.
Thank
guys.
You.
We totally are. We hope to do it again really soon.
Definitely.
Tell people where to find you.
Yes. Go to ChrissyMayer.com for tickets. I have a show coming up in New York City, March 25th at the Grizzly Pear in Midtown. And then I'll be in Staten Island, Jersey, back to Dallas in May.
Dallas.
Houston.
Woo!
Houston in August. So I got a smattering of dates here and there. I do Simpcast Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern on my YouTube channel. And then Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, I have... Wet Spot on Compound Media. That's always a mix of like comedians and like adult film stars that are in town. And that's kind of a fun, saucy show. And then I'll do interviews on my YouTube channel. Like I'll try to do them like Tuesday.
I'm going to have to come
Friday.
See you when you're in Texas. Cause I'm
yes!
in Waco. I'm right outside of Waco. So I'll have to make the drive and come see you either in Dallas or in Houston. I'll have to come see you for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to save me a seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much,
Chrissy. Thanks,
Chrissy.